Esther Perek Hei. Vayhi bayom ha-shelishi vatyubash Esther Malchut. So this is really the beginning of the transition into Esther's new world. You'll notice that there were the closing things that Esther did were things that could be understood, at least on the surface level, they could be understood as similar to the way in which the Hanhoga, normal Hanhoga is, the din of kinus. We could just see that as a typical kinus. Knoset kol ha-yudim ha-nimtzayim, same din as a tanit, on every tanit. We know that the essence of tanit Esther is totally different than the other taniot, even the halacha doesn't share any of the halachot. Simple halacha l'maisa, things that have to do with cholim, whether cholim have to make up for it, the way in which we act on a tanit, considered to be a day of sadness, all of the issues, it's very, very different. We already saw that the rationalization, or the rationale rather, behind the tanit was totally different from any other tanit. And yet, the elements of knisa, kihila, which are fundamental to all taniyot, that there's a din of going out and everybody should be coming together and exposure of our pain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and so on. That kinus, on one level, is just typical kinus of a tanit. On the other levels, however, what's happening here are also merumas too in various things. For instance, Ayudim ha-nimtzaim b'shushan, as the Medrash points out, is exactly the language, Ayudim ha-nimtzaim b'shushan, the language that was used for the original participation in the Siddur. So that means that there was an understanding on her part that what it was, and remember there was Mandiyama who said one of the reasons that she created the Mishta was in order to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu how low she had to sink in order to be able to get out of it. Maybe when he sees me being Mahanif to that kind of Rasha, he'll have Rachamim on me. So in a sense, her plan, as far as the going in herself to eat and to drink, which was Kenegad Mechirat Yosef, that we saw originally was the eating and drinking of HaMelech V'Haman Yashvu Lishtot, meanwhile, Yeshushan Navolcha was exactly that type of attitude. The fact that she would take that upon herself while everyone, this the Al-Sheikh points out, it wasn't 3 days that she was still fasting, because otherwise she wouldn't have been able to be in the class, which says that she was taking off some of those hours from herself, like the Gematria of Cain, instead of the full 72 hours. So here she is, and she's going to be today. She's going to be sitting in a mishnah, and everybody else is going to be sitting and fasting. So this is literally an inversion, and there's that sense of inversion of her in the way that she has to be now machanif to him. But more than that, the fact that she figures initially that there should be 3 days is part, as the Medrash says, that 3 days is always the maximum amount of which there's a gilui. In Yisrael netunim b'tzara, yoter mishlosha yamim. We find the same thing by Yonah Daga. We find Yosef himself was by Yosef Tam Elam Mishmar Shloshet Yamim, specifically. But more importantly, in terms of the Gula Atida, we find that it says, Bayom HaShelishi Yakimeno V'Nechyeh. So that means that she had in her mind the change, and yet, on the surface, keeping things the same. But from the moment that she goes in to the Melech, she's a different person. And there's still that little bit that's left in her that almost destroys her. And that is Vayi Bayom HaShelishi. So on that very, very day, and her intent was to utilize that day with the full understanding and perspective of what it meant and how it was a completely different way of doing what it was that needed to be done. The astonishing change from going into the king to sit and to beg and to cry and to Litchanein al Ama, which was the original non-hishtadut that she had pointed out to Mordechai, which was absurd and meaningless, into something which seems on the surface even more outrageous and meaningless, to go in without having any idea what you're going in for, except some vague throwing yourself into pure chaos, and to utilize specifically all the elements that are usher to utilize, to go seduce him, and until now I was ananusa, and now I instead of going out to be mitchanein, and to talk to him, and he should see my weakness, but on the contrary, she's going to go in now as a leader, and to get him to do what she wants in completely different ways that are not mechanical. Where Lamaisa, I mean, the irony of it is that the reason that we do not have a Tanit on Shabbat, or on Pesach for that matter, as this one is, the reason we're not Tzorek, says Rabbi Yossi, we're not Tzorek, the way Rashi explains it, we're not Tzorek because Ein anu betuchim betfilatenu, that it's going to work. So it sounds as if it's a real thing that we're doing. So what right do we have to be Nechalel, in a sense, the Ruach of Shabbat? So it's not proper to be Tzorek. Had we really seen it as a direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kabel Tfilatenu, then we wouldn't have that limitation. So that's also part of what it is that she's doing. This is the way it's going to be. So she goes, as Chazal pointed out, Vatilbash Esther Malchut, on a simple level, of course, means she puts on royalty in the sense of royal clothing. But, I mean, it doesn't say Bigdei Malchut, which it should say, says the Gemara. Therefore, it must mean that she put on Ruach HaKodesh. And we find the same language used, V'ruach Lavshat Amasai. Exactly the same idea. When he said Kol Achai by David, who was very doubtful about whether their intents were really to be shalom with him, and he immediately gets this inspiration of Ruach HaKodesh that's milabeshet him, and he shouts out this brocha of the brocha to David, to the Beis Yishai, to the Beis HaMalchus, and so on. And this is exactly what she does. So she takes that means that she understood the difference in perspective, and she put it on. Because obviously, to go into a situation like this, you can't go with the way that Mordechai wanted to go in attitude, not only what is it you're doing. The perspective has to be a different perspective. That's a perspective of Ruach HaKodesh. It's not normal consciousness. And there she is. Vata'amod b'chatzar Beit HaMelech ha'penimit nochach Beit HaMelech. All of this reminds him to her vision of that she's looking at the Beit HaMikdash, which is the Beit HaMelech. And the Gemara says she fails. She falters. Where do we know that from? From the pasuk that describes her own tefillot and her own feelings in Tehillim. Eli, Eli, lama azaftani. So as the Gemara puts it, you're going to be done me as amazed now? That I am responsible for the fact that I have to do this? Shema Tardan, that an anusa like me to somebody who did such a thing? Atadana shogei kemezid, al anus kiratzon. And then she suddenly realized that in the tefillah that she was speaking of, that occurs right there in the pasuk, that she asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save her miyad kelev. Atzilo micherev nafshi miyad kelev yechidati. And she suddenly says to herself, that's not the reason that I faltered. It's because I called him a kelev. And immediately she turns around and she says, Hoshieni mipi aryeh. And she calls him a lion. Of course, it's the original vision of Bavel and Achashverosh in the visions of Daniel. And immediately the Ruach HaKodesh comes back to her. Nothing more powerfully indicates what it is that's going on in terms of the changed paradigm. Because, again, you could have understood what she was doing. It's okay. You do what you have to do, you know. I mean, the opportunities may be pretty lousy in terms of what they offer you, but the end result is sof what you have in mind. But remember, the whole point of her new paradigm is that the end result is not in mind. The Reva Ratzalaya Malayadimi Makom Acher, which means that she needs to look at this as exactly the way you would look at a golden opportunity. Golden opportunity. So you would say it a golden opportunity. You're going in now for the moment that can make or break your life. You're going out to a very rich guy, and he's going to be the one that's going to give you the backing, and he's going to, whatever, buy out your company for $2 billion, get into to Bill Gates, very interested in your project. You're going to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, save me from this dog. Obviously not. Even if you think he was a dog, you would understand how inappropriate that is. That's exactly what's happening. I'm giving you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to her, a fantastic opportunity. What did you say it was? What did you say? A dog? You mean you're looking at him as an individual? You're looking at what's in front of you right now? This is the issue, that he's a dog. This is your key to all of history, and he's a dog. You've got to be out of your mind. I have nothing to do with this. As soon as she understood this, she had to recognize that he was her golden Aryeh. And that not only that, if she couldn't see it that way, there would be no way she could seduce him. She can't pretend to be in love with a dog. If she was going in there, then it had to be that he really was. It was going to fake orgasms, you understand? Esther is the one that's really going to be able to put out the true porno film. It's not going to happen. What it is that she's doing because she believes in it and feels it with every ounce of her existence. And that was the Ruach HaKodesh. You can't put on just a perspective, but then when it comes to the actual physicality of it, you feel, oh God, I wish I was out of here. So this is precisely what she needed to do. This was the final test for her, was the final stage that she needed to achieve in which the actual physical world would be seen to her as if she's looking at a screen in a matrix. This is what it really is to me. You're saying, but I mean, it still looks like some ridiculous, ugly, hairy Persian. That's nothing to do with it. That's the matrix. This is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a completely different level of relationships. At that moment, it says that the king takes a look at her, and there she is. Vayichir ot hamelech et Esther hamalkah. So obviously he sees her. He doesn't see Esther. He says Esther hamalkah. Remember, it was Vatilbash Esther malchut. That's exactly what he sees. He sees the Malchut that she was Labeshet. That's why the Gemara puts it as Shlosha Malachi Asharet Nizdam Nula. The greatest moment in which, I mean, we've seen all along, Esther was entirely fulfilled from within. I mean, it couldn't have been, especially if you hold your akroket, literally, I thought. It was all a question of what beauty was shining through her. So, Echad Shigbiyat Savara, Echad Shemashachut Shel Chesed Aleha, Ve'echad Shematachat Asharbit. So that she was basically surrounded by a completely different level of forces that turned her into something astoundingly beautiful, that corrected whatever had been wrong with her stance, with what she looked like. I mean, she must have been horrible, I mean, just fasting for almost 3 whole days, terrified out of her wits, dropping her entire life in a garbage bin. Kasher avadati avadati, as Rabbanea pointed out yesterday, the kasher avadati avadati of the Targum is, I give up on this world. I'm throwing my olam hazeh out. Anything I could have had, anything I could have achieved, anything I ever dreamt of, goodbye. It's a very, very powerful moment to her. She's walking in there and she has to be the most beautiful she ever was, most attractive to him that she ever was. It's an amazing moment when you think of it. I mean, it's the ability to put one's entire life and history and vision and hopes into one instant. Amazing thing. And so somebody described, you know, I forgot where I saw it. Somebody described the way in which Bob Hope, I think it was, interestingly, who was, already at the time, he was the one that was always 39, right?
Jack Benny.
Oh, that was Jack Benny. It was Jack Benny. So here he was came out 100 years old. And he's always saying, you know, 39. And he would come onto the stage and be absolutely amazing. And this guy, when it was backstage, because they had some kind of joint, and he comes and he says, I see this almost dead old man who literally can't stand. He's like, he's got his hands down, his head between his knees, barely breathing. I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, he's just going to expire on stage. Like, what am I going to do? He obviously is not going to be able to walk out there. And he describes that, you know, as the ding came on warning him that he has 5 seconds, you know, before he's going out. He says he had never seen anything like it. All of a sudden, a corpse becomes this radiating personality who's like but holding everything together by sheer force of will and commitment and clarity of what he wants to, puts on this brilliant performance. And goes back out and is dead. It's an amazing thing. And this is, I mean, basically, if you could imagine what she was going through, that it's exactly that kind of thing multiplied 100 times over. And this is what she carried off at this moment. It's just amazing. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It tears at you to think of this instant to her. So there she was, omedet bechatzer, nasachin beina. And so she indeed found in his eyes that desire, and spontaneously, Vayoshet HaMelech leEsther et sharbit hazahav asher biyado vatikrav Esther. And there you can see the whole feeling, how gingerly, vulnerably she comes up. Vatigav v'rosh hasharbit. That itself, so attractive, so soft, so gentle, so that she still appears to him to be the Esther of every man's dream. Just to have been so incredibly naive, and we pointed out before, it was at this moment that the Behikabetz Betulot Shenit saved her life. There's no way that she could have gotten away with this if she hadn't been willing to let go of everything, Behikabetz Betulot Shenit. And that's why Mordechai did it, in knowing that the day was going to come where there was going to be, this was the instant of the maximal suspicion. If there was any time that he was going to have her killed, it was by simply not giving out the Rosh Hashanah. I mean, to go in to intervene in the natural process of having a guard shoot her because she's obviously coming with a bomb hidden in her vest. I mean, what else is she doing here? The so-called girl who never wants anything. Yeah, right. Just walking in as if everything is fine. But, you know, maybe she's just so incredibly self-effacing that she doesn't even realize what this is. There's that possibility. And so she maintains this. Little does he know what he's in for. Wow, this is unusual. What's happening? This is exactly what David says to Bathsheba. What? I mean, this is unusual. This has got to be something major, right? Yes, sweetheart.
Last time when I was talking about this part, he said that Ahasuerus was basically getting prepared, like telling them, wait, don't shoot yet. Let's see what you really want. Kind of.
Yeah, but it wasn't. But to be no Seichena, to actually allow her, that had to have been a real.
So there was more confusion.
There was confusion still. He was still ready. Now, again, it's obvious from his response, especially with the Chazal understand it, that he still is convinced that she's a secret agent. Because that's that whole business about the Chatziah Malchut and so on. I mean, that whole. That means there was an undercurrent of fear about the whole problem of the balance of power. That was Lo Davar Chotzeh Malchut. And he keeps mentioning this, but it's a crazy place to say it. For Chazal to identify that in a place like this, Ad Chatziah Malchut still retains its double meaning is amazing, if it wouldn't be that he was still suspicious. That's why I was pointing out earlier. So, Malach Esther HaMalka, Uma Bakashatech, Ad Chatziah Malchut, V'yinetem Lach. But don't ask for too much. But I'm willing to give you whatever it is, but not something that's going to break up the Malchut. The Gemara puts it, Lo Davar Shechotzitz, the Malchut, not the Binyan Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Vatomer Esther, Ima HaLamelach Tov, I do have a very important thing. It just occurred to me that maybe we could have a party today. Today? I mean, can I look at my appointment book? No, I'm really just in the mood for a party. Yavo HaMelech V'Haman Hayom, you know, there's still 2 hours left. It was only 50 hours into the fest, 70 hours into the fest. Ela Mishter Asher Asiti Lo. What in the world? So again, building on this sense of spontaneity, insisting on having things taking place immediately, which of course implies to him that whatever the crisis is, it's coming, which is precisely why when they finally get to the moment, okay, so tell me, can we have another party? It's just an amazing story. What is the purpose of that? That we're going to have to see. There's Midrashim on that. What was the purpose of that? But in any event, the king, in fact, recognized that the idea over here is to get things done immediately. So he says, Miharu et Haman. Move it. La sot edvar ester. Vayavo ha-melech va-haman el ha-mishte asher asta ester. Vayomra ha-melech le-ester b'mishte ha-yayin. Now you'll notice it doesn't say that they did anything but come. There was no, it's not like at the second party when they're sitting with her, where we specifically use the word im to indicate that there was a meeting of the minds, there were feelings that were together. This whole thing was very, very tense. He's looking for the solution that he's been waiting for. So who are you? What is this really all about? And that's exactly, she knows this. That's why she says to him now, okay, I'm going to do it tomorrow. To do it tomorrow means I'm going to do everything that you've been waiting for. But I can't bring myself to do it now. Okay, so he says to her, Ma she'elatech v'inaten lach, u'ma bakashatech, ad chatziah malchut v'teyas. And there's different levels of understanding what the difference is between a she'ela and a bakasha. Many different levels. The simplest meaning is that a she'ela is something that is equivalent to borrow as opposed to take. So that it's a she'ela, that means it's there a small thing I can do for you. A bakasha, something that you do when you really ask from the bottom of your heart, this is my deep needs.
That's why I
stage. Yeah, afterwards.
A pretty please.
The bakasha? No. A bakasha means a deep need. Others understand there's two points. There's the she'ela, and there's the purpose of the she'ela. In other words, when we talk about what is the bakasha, what's behind it? What are you really aiming for? So in other words, you'll ask me for $1 million. That's your request. That's the she'ela. But what are you being mevakesh with that? What do you want to achieve? So the bakasha is something that is deeper. There can also be the question of the she'ela. You can ask for a favor for others. You could be bavakesh, something that is deep for yourself. Whatever the level is. Art chatziah malchut v'teyas. Vatan Esther Vatomar. It's really one thing. It's right up there on the surface. There aren't two levels. My she'ela is my bakasha. There's nothing hidden. I'm going to tell you exactly what I want and stop thinking that I'm manipulated to get something else. I am going to tell you my she'ela and my bakasha. Imatzati chen b'nei ha-melech. Of course, all of these kind of references are dual references to the king. Always to the king. This is as Nehemiah describes when he spoke to the king. It was always on two levels. Ve'et palel ala shevelake ha-shamayim v'omar. Imal ha-melech tov. We understand which melech he's talking to. So, Imal HaMelech Tov, Lotet et She'elat, you understand the build-up? Yes. V'lasod et Bakashati, yes. Then, Yavo HaMelech, this turns out to be central to the whole thing in a moment, the Chayinas. Yavo HaMelech V'Haman, El HaMishta Asher Eselahem, U'machar Ese Kidvar HaMelech. I know what you want. You're the one who wants something. I haven't been able to do it for you. But I'm really working on this, and maybe I was going to do it today. I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
We turn the table.
Yes.
But that's interesting. In the pasuk, you would expect it this, for it to say, "Haman el mishter asher asel lahem mahar." You would think, but she's making it even worse. That
way. Well, she's saying, "I want to do it. I want to do it
tomorrow." But she's separating it from the mishter. In other words, she's saying, "Come to the mishter, and then I'll do what you want." In other words, it's umahar asel goodbye. Not saying come.
No, I don't think so. I think the point on the Machar is almost as if to say, I've always wanted to do it. That's the point. I was about to do it. Because I can't. That's what she's been doing all along. That's what she's been doing. There's no way. This is a point that I had earlier. There's absolutely no way imaginable that she could have said no. That he would have tolerated, would have killed her on the spot. It's got to be that she was so amazingly tsanua that she couldn't. And he perceived that she couldn't. So tell me, what's your name? She would just fall apart every time. It's not that I don't want to. I can't. I'm going to do it tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll do it. I'll really do it tomorrow. I want to do it today. So the whole point, it's not that I invited you to a party to have another party. I'm going to think I'm crazy. That's the point. There was nothing hidden. I really felt so close to you. And finally, so at home here. And then I'm just overwhelmed. Let's do one more party. Tomorrow I'll do it.
Sure.
That's the whole sense of it. Because otherwise it's the ultimate manipulation. Oh, another party. And we're going to make a deal? No way. So now what we need, what we mentioned yesterday before we got to this, was very central to understanding how it is that she's pulling this off. And that was the question of understanding the nature of the tzniut of Esther as the tzniut of Rachel. In what way it makes it possible for her to be the most unsinuous person in the world. I mean, maybe Rachel was a little bit worse than her in terms of running over and kissing the boys that she'd never seen before in her life. I mean, anyway. But again, the tzniut, as we were medayek in the Gemara, was the tzniut of non-exposure of that which is valuable. It has nothing to do. It was the Dvar HaMelech Asher Amar Lo Shmuel that he was loyal. Not the fact of not wanting the Malchut. It was an order that Lavan not make fun of the relationship that she had with Yaakov, but it should be known that there were simanim. That was the problem. And that was the deeper reason that allowed her to allow the situation to evolve in such a way that she would have no choice but to give over the simanim, because the only other option was to let Lavan know. She couldn't do that. What is it about that type of issue that allows her to do what it is that she does over here? It's quite amazing. What is there about that type of exposure? Well, one thing we have to understand is that what it was that she was doing is, in fact, a tikkun for what happened to Shaul with Amalek that allowed Agag to live in Tzniut itself. That's what's most amazing. We know that what happens is that David HaMelech, famous master with Michal. So what happens is, the Orein Hashem is Ba'ir David. David has been dancing. He's been completely wild. Michal Ba'chol Nishkefa Ba'ada Chalon Vateret HaMelech David Mifazez Mekarker Ba'ozren Vativez Lo Veliba. She looks down at him for what it is that he's doing. And so after this big, beautiful scene in which everybody comes and they bring the Orein in to the oil, the special oil that he built for it, brings Ayla Shlomim, gives everybody a brocha B'Shem Hashem Tzvakot, gives out gifts to everybody that's there. Everyone goes home, and he now turns to go to his house. He comes, Levarech et Beito, and out comes Michal Bat Shaul Likrat David. And she says to him, Manich Bad Hayom, Melech Yisrael, yes, indeed. This is a day that will go down, a great honor, wonderful day. Ashenigla Yon Laineam Hot Avadabi Kigalot Niglot Achadarekim, who today has exposed himself in the eyes of the lowest of the low, of the maids in the house, to be an absolutely empty person, like a slob on the street. Vayomer David el Michal, I say this in front of God, Lifnei Adonai, Asher Bachar Bi Me'avich U'Mikol Beito. Let me remind you that I was chosen above your father and you, and anybody that had any connection to him. And every word that you're saying is directly out of everything that was wrong with your father. I was the one who was chosen at Savototi Negin, Al Am Adonai Yisrael, V'sichakti lifnei Adonai, the chutzpah that you have to call the people that work in the palace, the lowest of the low, the maids. Nekaloti od mizot v'hiti shafal b'nai v'ima amahot asher amarta. These are the maids. I say they're imahot. Chutzpah, who you are, the great princess that can look down at the woman who are doing the real work. Imame chabda, I'm happy to be mechubed in their eyes. And that was lemicha bat shelo hayala yalad ad yomota. So there's a beautiful, I mean, we know that the tzniut of Shaul was what saved his life. The fact that he didn't want to expose himself, it's the hine hayom hazeh ra'u. If he had said, it's just stam. Ra'u einecha, et asher netancha hayom biyadi b'mahara, v'omar lahargecha, v'achus alecha. That would have made sense. There you were in my hands, I could have killed you, and I was merachim on you, and that shows that I'm not after you. But that's not what he says. Very strange. Yerushalmi points out, that's not what he says. He says, v'tachas alecha. What's that supposed to mean? The tzniut, says the Gemara, tzniutcha, chas alecha. When I saw the way that you were so careful about exposure, even though nobody was there, as far as you know, it was a sense of the presence always, the vulnerability of a human being, the presence of the Shekhinah. I couldn't kill somebody like that. And therefore, he turns here to Michal, and he says the most amazing thing. You have to say this himself to Shaul, understanding. Shaul, so he says to them, let me tell you something. Michal, manich bad hayom. He says, I'll tell you something. That everything that they do for their own covenant. That's the difference between us. Minor difference. That's the difference. It's an astounding thing to say. This is the man who he himself was made in the pasuk that this is the ultimate tzniut. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. The Gemara was dorish that b'plei tzniut shehayta b'Rachel zachta v'yatza mimena Shaul. You say everything that they did to Chvod Atzmah. That's an amazing thing. And in fact, we pointed out, you would have thought that the Gemara would have brought a raya to the tzniut of Shaul from the fact that it was Nechbal HaKelim. I don't want the Gedula. I didn't ask you for Gedula. I don't want my name to be announced on the public announcement. The Gemara doesn't even talk about that. And what David HaMelech is being Megala there to Michal is that tzniut that comes from fear of damage to oneself is not tzniut. It's mevakesh kvod atzmo. The idea of I need to protect myself because I will, and this is what happens to him in the end. He didn't want the malchut. Had he not wanted the malchut for issues that were true tzniut, he wouldn't have been destroyed by the malchut. The fact is that initially it was his own recognition that he doesn't want the exposure of himself in the malchut, not the relationship, but rather the need to protect ultimately himself in the relationship. That's not the meaning of tzniut. The meaning of tzniut is to protect the emergent relationship, which has nothing to do with protecting yourself. As a matter of fact, the one thing that any fool knows, that someone who enters a relationship with the desire to protect oneself is impossible to really have a full relationship. There's nothing more destructive to the emergence of a relationship than the constant concern for what does this mean to me and how am I risking things and so on. That's the idea. So it's always the acceptance of the vulnerability in what is going to change and the openness to that change. That's the meaning of Nasa v'Nishma. That's the meaning of Italech Lefanai. That's the meaning of Rachel's ability to recreate a Gula without even knowing. The willingness to be buried out in the street, so to speak. To constantly be vulnerable to the vision of what's happening in the future. To say that I don't want it because I'm nervous is not tzniut. In the end, it leads to paranoia. Which is exactly what happened to him. He became mad about protecting himself. Classic madness. Why doesn't anybody tell me? Who's plotting against me? I mean, it's like out of a textbook. He really believes people are plotting against him and they're spies. And even though he sees in front of his eyes, I could have been kidding. Must be somebody brought out my things and gave them to David. That's how he got them. I mean, it's to the point where nothing you're going to say is not going to have some type of mad explanation of how this came to be. Because it's everybody's against me. I thought it was only him. Now I see it's everybody. Maybe it's my own closest people that are against me. This, of course, is what happened here to Achashverosh. His attempt to protect himself made him insane in the end. But it was that, and that was all caused by Haman in the first place, it was that which, in the end, changes everything around and saves. then that means that hinachti kvod atzmi ubikashti kvod shamayim means that the activity of someone who could say that I am on a higher darga in terms of my own tzniut, that my lack of tzniut is greater than the tzniut of Shaul. And he could say that to her. And this is the reason I was nifchar. Means that remarkably, there is not even value to tzniut where the relationship that you wish to protect is less important than the relationship that truly needs protecting. So if I am going in because of Reva Vatzalaya Amod Yodim B'Kol Bacher, and I'm trying to protect the most intimate of any possible relationship, which is the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present in the Bria, is there anything more vulnerable than the Shekhinah itself? Anything more delicate than the presence of the Shekhinah itself in a world which is so foreign to it? Far more foreign than anything that could be to one or another person in a relationship with another. Lo machshavotai machshavotechem, lo darchechem derachai. And nonetheless, we have a relationship. This is what I'm going to be makbid on. This is what David is saying. What's your problem? That people could look up my underpants? This is the problem? You don't like how high I kicked my legs? This is the problem when I'm bringing the Oren Hashem into the Beis HaMikdash. Manich bad hayom. There's a place for my covet in that, for my protecting myself in that. And that is the Rambam says. That's what the posik that he uses. Someone who even thinks in that fashion is not just a chote. He's an idiot. Shote says the chote is an idiot. Mad. He's mad. Well, what has happened to your system of values? What has happened to your understanding of reality that you could possibly think in those terms? So to her, the moment that she could understand that a kelev is an aryeh, then obviously everything changes. Once that's true, the normal standards of what would be considered tzniut behavior is a violation of all tzniut, exactly as David said. And she, by doing this, was mitakenet, the very lack of tzniut. Well, that chisoron in which tzniut was not shleima in terms of Shaul, which is what allowed him to fear the Am when it came to Malach. Yareti at Am. What do you mean, Yareti at Am? Aren't you Melech Yisrael? Rosh Yiftei Yisrael ata. I know that you're a guy that's got a problem, but take responsibility. You are Rosh Yiftei Yisrael, says Shmuel to him. And this is the Netzach Yisrael, Lo Yishaker. This is the Mida of Netzach, which is what is coming out here all along. This is the way things are. These are the facts. There are certain things that never change. You cannot win against the reality of Reva Chatzalaya Mod Yudim HaMakom Acher than to consider what it is that you're doing in that context, what the thing that needs to be protected is. She herself says to Mordechai, what are you talking about? Not eating matzah on Pesach. There's no Yisrael. There's no Pesach. Forget about the matzah on Pesach.
She's standing in front of Shaul. What are you doing for all intents and
purposes? Exactly.
Who can't fight Amalek?
Exactly. Wow. And she's doing his battle. Wow. The Re'o Hatov. The Re'o Hatov Mimeno. She's standing exactly at that point. The power of it, the whole, the hiss is so overwhelming that you can, I mean, it shakes you to the core. To see the unbelievable straight line of history coming from every last word, every last thought, every last internal thing, and how it keeps coming out in all of these subtle ways. It's just mind-boggling.
The Targum tracks the entire lineage from every single
going all the way back to Hagan.
But it's crazy that
this is, by the way, relates back to the Vayives. The Vayives is the Vativas Bilibar, you see. We said, Boze ben Boze. Vayives Esav et HaBechora becomes the Vayives Be'enav, becomes exactly the Gilei of Bizayon. It's that type of Bizayon of Michal Bat Shaul. This is what you're Mavaza. Yes, because I have nobility. I have class. I have truth sniut. That's literally what she thought. When I look at the maids in the kitchen, to think that you would be on the level of the maids in the kitchen, the hoity-toity nose in the air that emerges from something that began with, and that's what he points out there. Oh, the maids in the kitchen. Maids in the kitchen that are a hell of a lot more important than you. I call them the imahot. Who are you? You're not even ruia to be a mother. And that's where he's making fun of her, the imahot, and she doesn't have any children. Call imahot amahot. So you be the amahot. So it's amazing how he's like, the reaction is so perfect. It's so natural. It's so human to detect in the way that she talks What went wrong? That was the idea. I understand where that comes from now. Straight from your father. Everything that was wrong in him, that's what you are. And again, here it's carried, as we see, throughout. It's always the Nashim that carry the point that needs to be dealt with. And here, Esther stands in that position. Before we move on to the next pasuk, let's just take a look at some of the other, we took one particular approach, but there's some interesting ways that the midrashim look at some of what happened. It's a very, very cute midrash, according to which Ahasuerus tried his darndest not to look at Esther when she was coming in, because he knew that would kill it for him. So it says he kept turning his side. That says Vayhi. What is it, Vayhi? Because he's shouting, no, I don't want to look at her. come along, three Malachi Asharis. And they turn his head around, Shalobetovata. And he's screaming, Vay, no. Of course, he knew the minute he looked at her, it was all over. And there he was. So that... yeah, the Vayhi. it's just very cute. He knew. He did yesterday, we're talking about. Little did he know what he was in for. But the fact is that he had already seen... He had stayed away from her for 30 days already, understand? Because he realizes he's finished around it. And then the issue of Machar is also, we were saying, okay, it's merely the creating of the circumstances, but it's interesting that the Medrash brings that the reason that Esther said Machar was because of the history of Machar when it comes to Nefilat Amalek. So we have Machar Anochi Nitzav al Rosh HaGiva, which was the original Milcham against Amalek. By Shaul, it says the same thing, Ke'et Machar Shlach Lecha Ish. And then we have over here Machar Esekid Var HaMelech. And actually, there's a beautiful Ibn Ezra that says that because she had no idea what she was doing, she was waiting for some kind of opening. So when nothing happened, she had no choice. I mean, one of her ideas was, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Merachem. Yeah, sadly, nothing happens. So she figures, okay, we'll wait that sure enough, in the middle of the night already they had the nace, so that by the time she got to the party tomorrow was already, because that was part of the union of her leaving things to happen, so she wasn't going to press. But the other beautiful nekuda is the way that the Medrash there points out that Vayomer HaMelech Maharu et Haman, which is, as David HaMelech points out, Yirbu Atzmotam Achar Maharu. So that part of the Nefila is the Mehira of Maharat Haman, which of course goes all the way back to the Egel, to the Lo Yud Boshashu. The other meaning of Lo Yud Boshashu is not to take your time. It's the Kiboshesh Moshe, Loredet Menahar. We had a Gemara, Late Dein Tzricha Boshesh. Boshesh means this doesn't need anything, any additional weight. You can eat it just as it is. You have to put it on its own. There's a meaning of the Gemara there. But the idea of Busha, that means that very profoundly. In contrast to the Maisa Egel, which is by the word Egel, me do it quickly. The whole idea was the way, and of course Aaron says the same thing, Machar, Chagosha Machar. Says Rashi says the Machar, I figured by Machar everything will be okay. You know, by Machar, Moshe will be here. The whole thing will turn around. It'll be the Venahafachu. They think it's the Diego. It'll really be Chagla Shevakachav. So the Ba'agala, as we say in the Kaddish, Ba'agala means to do things very quickly. The whole story of the ego is the spontaneity, the rapidity with which the Zahav was brought, and Aaron was shocked. As he said to Moshe, I thought it would take them a long time. If I told them to get it from their wives and this, and nobody was going to let them. Little did I know they'd forcibly rip out the gold, and they'd come and they'd bring it with such rizut, I had no idea. But obsession, that obsession is the thing that is actually destructive, because the most indicative of not allowing things to develop. Since the whole point, as we saw yesterday, that tzniut, the meaning of tzniut, is recognizing how vulnerable things that develop on their own are. The more tzanua a person is, the more the recognition, the more the responsiveness to the underlying busha of the way in which you are completely, totally vulnerable. So the more subtle something is, the more detailed its interrelationship, the more it's open to destruction, because the very context of it, the way people look at it, especially when you're dealing with something like stature, attraction, connection, these are things that any little thing is capable of destroying. I mean, we understand it takes a tiny bit of enzyme to completely wipe out all of your thoughts. And all of it is, no, here, watch Richie on his little bit of codeine, and that's it. You know? But seriously, it's the most delicate of things. So because of that, she felt that, on the contrary, doing something that would have been Maher would have been exactly the opposite of the new paradigm that she's trying to take. The responsiveness needed to be immediately. But what it is that one does after responding is one allows things to develop. And therefore, even according to the simple pshat, the way the Ibn Ezra points out, she wasn't going to act until there was movement. And it was, what's my next move? I have no idea. So if you ask me, okay, what do you want? I'll tell you tomorrow. Figuring that by tomorrow I'll know what I want, but I really don't know what I want because I have no idea what I'm going to ask you. Since at this point, the plan is completely up in the air. In doing that, being able to wait it out, that's exactly what Shaul couldn't do. Remember that Shmuel had told him, you wait, don't do anything until I get there. He can't wait. He can't wait. What am I going to do? He's not showing up. The people are starting to gather. It's terrible. I'm going to lose everything. And another 2 minutes would have saved him. Shmuel says to me, you couldn't wait. And so we now move on to the next pasuk, which is a complete change of ambience. I mean, up until now, we've got this amazing scene in which Esther is capable of dealing with what she needed to do with this new paradigm and gets herself together. And that, by the way, is the other meaning of Atilbash, Esther Malchut. It's again a simple meaning. Big day Malchut. The Gemara's meaning Ruach HaKodesh. But the Medrash's meaning, she put on the Malchut that was always hers for Nimot Shaul, because that's basically what she needed at this moment. When he sees her, he sees Esther HaMalka. Malach Esther HaMalka. So the first thing that he notices is that, good Lord, this is no commoner. And of course, this is exactly the next day. This is the first time he starts talking to her directly, where he switches. Because then he really understands that he is outclassed. But now we have what happens with Haman. So, Vayetze Haman Bayoma, who Sameach V'Tovlev. This, of course, was one of the things that she had in mind. That's what she wanted. The Gemara says, she figures L'Fnei Shever Gaon. The more they think of themselves, and the higher they are, the harder they fall. And that's the first time that we ever see Haman happy. He was happy, but not happy for Tov Lev. And the Gemara darshens the difference between just plain happy and Tov Lev. Misamche Lev. Question, what is that considered to be? Question of Torah. It doesn't say both Sameach V'Tov Lev. Tosfos says in Herach. So here he comes out. This is the first moment in his life that he's absolutely reached the pinnacle of everything that he wanted to achieve. We see that that's the case because when he comes home, he has to take out everything that he owned and bring out the fact that this is the moment I've always planned for, and it's not showing. And so for the first time, he's really happy. At this point, Haman is convinced that Mordechai has been properly chastised, now that the Jews are going to be destroyed, and he undoubtedly knows all of the details. And dare he, once again, not bow down to the man that just got invited to the king and the queen, the only one of all the Sarai HaMelech. We know that that was very important because that's what he says over when he gets home. So we have direct insight into the way the man is thinking. He comes by Haman because, you know, this is the minute where he's finally going to get a little bit of respect. Not only did Haman not korea v'mishtacha, Mordechai, not korea v'mishtacha, he didn't get up. He didn't stand up. We talked about Herodotus' discussion of how very, very stylized and very clear-cut was the interrelationship between different levels in Persia that he was aware of. So that Ishtachavaya was indeed the highest. That was where somebody was like completely outclassed. Not to get up is just, I mean, what's the answer to that? No, until now you were claiming Jews don't bow down. Okay, fine. You know, stand at attention, salute, whatever. And now, not only doesn't he get up, he pretends he doesn't exist. Velozami menu. He sees him looking at him. And now there's absolutely no excuse. And it's here that the Gemara says, Zeh baba puzbuli, v'zeh baba puzbuti. There he goes, waving his little contract on his shoe again. You know, that's exactly who do you think you are. And this is it. I mean, this, he can't take it anymore. But he controls himself, which is interesting. I mean, why exactly does he control himself? Why not try to get the guy right now? But he's vayavo, he comes to his house, vayishlach, and he actually sends out a message, calls in all of his friends, vayaveyat o'avav, ve'et zeresh ishto, vayisaper le'ma'aman et kvod ashro v'rov banav. And he goes over his attainments. So there he is explaining what he's worth. How much has he achieved? Look how large the family is. And now I have finally attained this moment. And not only that, at this point, we saw that was a whole gradual process that we were medayik before. That first he was Megadol Haman, then he was Vianaseu, then he put his kisei on above and beyond all of the other sarim. So he says this over. He takes it as his gradual growing political skill, financial skill, family connections. Vayomer Haman, and today was the greatest day of my life. Ah, Sameach v'tov lev, aflo evia estera malkayim ha-melech, ela mishteh asher asata kimoti. What do you say? Out of all of the various governors, diplomats, advisors, nobody. It was the first time I ever heard of such a thing. A private cocktail party with the king, the queen, and yours truly. Ha! Haman! Not only that, v'gam l'machar, ani karu la'im ha-melech. I am invited, specially by her, to come together with the king. And you know what? It just ain't worth a damn. That's what's unbelievable. The chol zeh. The Gemara says, what do you mean v'chol zeh? I mean, zeh is something that you can point out. What's he pointing at? Says the Gemara, that Russia used to carry around an iPad with Excel. And he was able to show everything. Here's the amount of money I got. Here's the number of people that were. Here's all my grandchildren. This is the name of everything that I own. In those days, maybe it wasn't an iPad, but it was Hakuk Alibo. He had it all right there in a little notebook. I'm sure if he could have, it would have been an iPad. But, I mean, it's exactly the same thing you would say today, you know. Out walks the big CEO, and he's got it all. He comes into the house, look, this is what I'm worth. Takes out his Excel. That's exactly what was going on. I completely relate to this. And amazingly, he says, it isn't worth anything to me. I can't take it. The very fact that that man is there makes my life so miserable that none of this and none of my achievements are worth anything. Now, this is an astonishing statement. I mean, to come clean on such a thing, you understand? Who is Mordechai? What do you care? What difference does it make? This is such an amazing inversion. It's the entire issue of Amalek themselves. In other words, the vayives that we talked about before, the way in which a person can be sensitive, this is an amazing Gemara. A person can be sensitive to the context of his achievements. And that the fact that someone is there who doesn't value, one person doesn't value him, it exposes his own vulnerability. And it makes it not real. Somebody cannot care. It's like having somebody go to sleep in the middle of Estershire. And then you think to yourself, you mean all of this?
Who would think like that?
All of this is just worth closing your eyes to? No. So then you figure, what's it worth it? And you close the book and you walk out. So listen to this amazing story. Here the Gemara Gittin is talking about Aspasianus Caesar. He was besieging Yerushalayim. Remember the famous story where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wanted to make peace. He had to go through that whole pretense of having died, and then they let him out, and then he comes to Aspasianus, and he gets out of his supposed coffin. And he says, Shalom Alach Malka, Shalom Alach Malka. Vespasianus says, stop playing games with me, you know, I'm not the king. And, you know, for that alone, you should be killed. And if I am a king, how come it took you so long to get out of here? At that moment comes along, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai tells him, it's not possible that you're not a king, because Yerushalayim can only be given into the hands of a king. And at that moment, they come with a whole letter from Rome, announcing that he has been elected the Caesar. in the Senate. All right, so, all right, that's a big discussion. And he was in the middle of taking off his shoes and relaxing when Rabbi Elkanah Zaka had come in, and he can't get off his other shoe. So he says, well, what's going on? Well, you know, when a person feels really good and gets such good news, you know, they swell. So your feet are swollen. You can't get the shoe off. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? So it's very simple. Find someone who hates your guts and have them walk in front of you. So he finds somebody he knows can't stand him. Watch, this is the moment that was appointed to be Caesar, you understand? Guy walks in front of him and says, wow, that's great, he came right off. Then he says to Yochum and Zakeh, you guys are so smart, what took you so long to come out and make peace with me? But anyway, but for us, I mean, this is an amazing thing, the man to acknowledge that here he is on top of the world, he's got everything right there on his iPod, and that's it. He just can't live like this. What's he going to do? Now, you notice that this is itself is a remarkable story. I mean, he's already managed to control the entire country in terms of destroying the nation of Mordechai. Such a big deal to knock off Mordechai. What do you mean, vayitapek? Why didn't you just shoot him? He comes home and he has to go through this whole discussion and explain to the family. And I mean, what do you got to explain? What's the big deal? You didn't talk to anybody about taking over the country to be able to destroy Klal Yisrael. Why do you need to discuss this issue? What are you going to do about the Jew boy at the gate? It's a joke. What are you bothering them for?
Didn't he already have
Eitan? Huh?
Aren't there some that say he had Daniel knocked off?
Yeah, he knocked off. Some say yes. And certainly the major sheet that he was taken out of his power. So what was happening here? This leads us, I mean, there's obviously simple pshat to what's happening, and that is, the Malbim's pshat is that he can't afford to knock off Mordechai, which is remarkably exactly what had happened to Ahasuerus and Vashti. This the Malbim doesn't point out. It was his own medicine that was being used against, because what had happened was, you will recall, that Haman Ahasuerus could not allow himself to avenge Vashti's slight, because that would mean that it bothered him. So remember, Chamato Barabo, he had to let it burn inside, going absolutely crazy, but he had to pretend that it was just, she's a bit high today, she's not all there as a queen, but it's okay, don't worry about her. Meanwhile, he's ready to kill her, but he can't. It was Haman's own Eitzah that took it away, remember, from Ahasuerus. It said, now 1 minute, you may not care, but the country cares. Not because of you, but because this is something that's going to undermine the morality of the entire country. That was his approach. It worked beautifully. So they got rid of Vashti. So he comes back home. They tell him the Eitzah that he had given to Ahasuerus. He was the OH to Ahasuerus. They tell him, look what they tell him. The idea over here is, you obviously cannot knock off Mordechai because of anything that he did to you, but he can certainly be made an example for the good of the country of what happens. Now, if he's hung up all the way 50 amot high, let everybody say, this is what is done to people who don't respect king's ruling. And then it has nothing to do with you. Let it be done. Not you, of course. Yasu it. They'll take care of it. Because it's not about you. Naturally, exactly the same thing. And this way, Ubaboker Emor Lamelech, prepare it. Tell the king in the morning, and early in the morning, before they have time to arrange support and lobbyists and so on, get there first thing in the morning, Vietluet Mordechai Alav, and then they'll get rid of Mordechai, and then you can walk into the Mishteh. Uboim HaMelech al HaMishteh Sameach. You got to be able to walk in there in absolutely top form. That's all you need, is to be there and not be completely yourself. So he's quite happy about this idea. Makes the eight. Now, we know the Gemara tells us there's two sheet where that eights come from. Well, first of all, he had to tear down his own house. There was no other eights, Gavoach HaMishim HaMa. But of course, I mean, there's got to be meaning specifically to the Gavoach HaMishim HaMa. The only other place we find HaMishim HaMa is in the Teva of Noah or in the measurements of the Beit HaMikdash. So Oman Yomah says, this indeed he had gotten from Parmashta, who, his son, by the way, that name showed up in the documents from Persia. And we have a picture of a doctor with Parmashta's name on it. That's another one of these wild things. And Vaizarta. But anyway, so it's Parmashta, says the Medrash, was actually the governor of Kurdistan. And he's had him locate the remains of Tevat Noah. Boy, wouldn't the Christians like that one, huh? And take out the beam that was Chamishi Mama from the Teva. And then Mandi Omer says, well, but this was the beam from the Beit HaMikdash. Of course, it doesn't necessarily have to be a contradiction. But in any event, it means that either this was the absolute lowest to which humanity had sunk, in a sense, the result of the Mabul directly, or it was the highest. And of course, the Teva and the Hatzol of the world and the nature of the Beit HaMikdash is fundamentally related. That's why it's a Sukkah. The Sukkah is a Sukkah. We learn out all the dinim of the height of the Sukkah. But let us now take a look at the broader picture. And this, I think, is really what this parak is about, is a remarkable moment here. Here we have Haman, who is the one who is suffering from Boshashu, remarkably. The guy from Amalek, who thinks that he can make everything else meaningless through his Bizoyon, and now becomes affected by the Bizoyon that Mordechai is going out of his way to show him. The contrast between Mordechai's behavior and Esther's behavior here is so powerful that it cannot be coincidental that the themes are marked off in this way. Here we have her being Machanif Lemelech, and pretending that she's somebody else, and but Dafke insisting that she doesn't want the Jews to think they have a chutlan of the Beit HaMelech. Mordechai, on the other hand, is redoubling his efforts to cause trouble. After Hitler's already there, he sticks his tongue out and goes, wee, 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 wee. I mean, it's an absolute crazy thing. It really is weird when you think about it in that sense. We have like one pasuk after the other. Tomorrow, a second, Bachar, a second, Varmelech, and then, Samer, Vatov, Leva, there is Mordechai waving the old proverbial shoe contract. That cannot be a code. If we look more deeply, what appears to be such a very simple book, we realize has a number of rather complex interwoven things. And the most significant dualism in the story is the way in which, in essence, we could have taken out every mention of Mordechai and still had the story of what happened to Esther, in which he doesn't even have to be mentioned by name. Or we could take out every mention of Esther and have a completely different story in terms of Mordechai's perception. There are two different storylines. One storyline involves the relationship of Mordechai and Haman. The other storyline involves the relationship of Esther and Ahasuerus. Well, what's interesting is that Mordechai and Esther have a particular interrelationship in which we introduce him as a Mordechai HaYehudi, which is called the entire time, and he's an Ish Yemini. Esther, on the other hand, in the end, expresses herself entirely as Binyamin. So that's the Mistorin of the Menot Rachel and so on. The way that they act is that Mordechai indeed acts like, as the Gemara says, Yehudi. That is to say, Kol HaKofer B'Avodat Kochavim, he goes out of his way, he's the nut who is ready to risk everything to make a stand specifically as a Yehudi. And he tells this to Haman, says, well, I am not going to be Mishtachavet to you. This, of course, is exactly what Chanani Mishael V'Azariah did. As we saw before, as the Gemara says, he acts like a Yehudi. The king tells them, Vadis, excuse me, that's not what we do. We have no interest in your absurd icons. We're certainly not going to bow down to your Tselem. Do whatever the hell you want. We have absolutely no interest in you. As far as we're concerned, you don't even register. You remember their words. They're very, very harsh words that they say directly to the king, and that's all. Do what you want. You know, burn us alive, throw us to the lions. It doesn't interest us, really. As far as we're concerned, you're not a king in this issue. It's exactly what he did. So he's acting out the storyline of the Yehudi. Now, we saw Daniel didn't do that. Remember, Daniel got out of the way. For whatever reason, however worked out, there was that subtlety of what happens inside and the non-subtlety of what's happening outside. If you think about Mordechai being the Yehudi and the Yeminim, we spoke about this when we first started the Megillah, that it was very clear that what Mordechai represents is indeed the chibur of the approach of Yehuda and the approach of the Aseres HaShvatim. That nekuda that was left of Yisrael, the Binyamin and Yehuda, are together. That was the entire tikkun of Mechirat Yosef, which we've seen referred to again and again here in so many subtle ways, including the Mitziat Chein of Esther herself with the Mel and so on. That mistorin, that way in which people are left to discover themselves, remember, begins with Yosef. That's exactly what he did. Didn't tell anybody where he was. Didn't tell anybody who he was. Allowed them to work it out. Forced them to come to recognize what they were through himself. And we've seen all the Ramazim, we went through it, if you recall, all the different Ramazim in which Esther and Yosef are tofes, exactly the same type of anhaga, exactly the opposite of the anhaga of Yehuda, which means that this must be, and of course Kabbalistically is, the other lane, so to speak, which is the tikkun of that which holds together the development of Yesod and the development of the Malch. So that's Netzach v'Hod, Kabbalistically, Hod being Chanukah, Netzach being Hora. The fact that we call Mordechai an Ish who is both Yehudi and Yemini means that he must be the key to the interrelationship between the two of them. Now, what really is happening over here is remarkable, because he is acting out in the ways of Yehuda that were specifically the things that Yeravam ben Avot rejected. If you think about everything that developed in the Aseret HaShvatim, if you would have asked them what Klal Yisrael should look like, Esther, in which the ideas that lie behind what you are invisible to others. They provide the strength of your identity and so on, but you don't go around preaching and talking about them, and it's all about living within the way the world is, exactly as Achav did. The success is entirely worldly, exactly the opposite of what Yehoshaphat did, in the way that they would make fun of him. This, you call this a king? The guy eats quiche. I mean, a king is supposed to live it up. That's part of being a king, right? So Ad Kedei Kach, the details of the tzniut that Esther is expressing over here. These kind of things are exactly what it is that they were looking for. She lived the way she wanted to live, but nobody knew how well she lived. Both of these approaches were necessary here, and that's why we have these interwoven themes. Both of the approaches were necessary to reconstruct the identity of Yisrael. In reality, the way in which the things worked out for the Jew in the street scattered the Am that was Mefuzar Mufurad Ben Ha'amim, that even Haman picks up the weakness of that, the vulnerability of that, and he even tells the king, as the Gemara says, you know, what are you worried about? These people, they have no country of their own, no support anywhere. They're weak, scattered, vulnerable. What are you afraid of? Somebody's going to take, you're going to create some type of gap in the Malucha? Not at all. They're not even noticing. And that indeed, the contrast to Haman over here, where he's got everything. I mean, he's talking about this vast family and his connections and his money. You don't hear a word of that when it comes to Esther's, the little poor orphan girl, and Mordechai, nobody knows where he came from. This Gola Miatzvah doesn't have a family. I mean, these are people that are just like wandering around without anything at all. Total contrast to Haman, right? And yet, what it was that Esther did in not only eliciting out of Mordechai, the Rebbe, but actually the Lech Knoset Kol HaYodim, the record which becomes in the end the mitzvahs and Mishloach Manos and the idea of Matanot Lev Yonim, and the taking responsibility for what you are as an Am. This was her. The ideas on the surface were Mordechai. The statement about what it is to be a Yehudi is Mordechai. But the underlying nature of what it is to be Yisrael, the word that isn't mentioned, is Esther. And so you have over here a true, just as every time we're misfollow, when we finish the psukim of Geula, before we get into Shemona Esrei, we pray for Yehuda v'Yisrael, right? Before we get to Gaal Yisrael, it's the relationship of Ufdechin Umecha Yehuda v'Yisrael. This is the moment of Geula, which essentially we are preparing it through Ufdechin Umecha Yehuda v'Yisrael. So the two themes meet here in this parashah. Esther doing her thing, completely, completely without any sense of having it planned, of knowing exactly what she's doing, responding as needs to be responded, but on the surface, nothing is happening. Everything is beneath the surface. All of the power is beneath the surface. And then, immediately, one pasuk later, Haman goes out of that party, and Mordechai takes exactly the opposite extreme, in which there you have, once again, the assertion what it is to be Yochid Ba'elam, Yehudi Ba'elam, Kofar Ba'avod Zorah Ba'elam. Simple ideas, clear-cut descriptions of an identity that can be put into two sentences. None of the complexities, none of the subtleties, none of the fears of vulnerability of a Shaul or of an Esther or of a Rachel. It's only in the Vet Yehuda Shalach Lefanav that we find that Chibur. And indeed, Yosef himself only came to that assertion after Yehuda arrived. Up until then, it was all Esther-like. Don't tell them who you are. I'll take the weaker ones. We'll go in there. And they're the ones who absolutely refuse. And they tell Paro, listen, we have no interest in staying in Mitzrayim. We don't like Mitzrayim. We don't like you. It's like exactly this type of anarchy. Poor Yosef is tearing out his hair. And they're saying everything he tells them not to say. And it's almost the same scene as we have over here. And so we can actually see this particular perek as the meeting of the themes, the intersecting of the themes, the way Mordechai was handling, the way Esther was handling, and it was Esther's insight that allowed these themes to intersect. And now it suddenly turns out, that surprisingly, the Rebbe Vatzalayam Odeyodimim Makom Acher that Mordechai was talking about was himself. Because in the end, this was the only thing that allowed Esther to move. So although she was the one that had everything set up, and that's connected to Hachana of Haman, he was the one that actually provided the trigger for the entire thing. So that just as oftentimes you've got the bomb and you've got the trigger may be that small catalyst. And in terms of, it's remarkable because of what it's saying, in terms of what Yisrael is, it's a small trigger. The religion of Yisrael is a tiny piece of Yisrael. It's a trigger of Yisrael. The open statements of identity of Yisrael is a small part of Yisrael, but it's the catalyst. And the catalyst is what allows the entire thing to blow up, the entire reaction to take place. And in this case, literally, it works out that way. That it's all of the Hakana providing the background for the deeper sense of the world means. Whereas for Mordechai, as far as anybody can see what he's doing, he's a madman. As we mentioned earlier, Clark, they wanted to knock him off. He's crazy. He's going to get us all killed. You don't sit there wiggling your fingers out of your ears and sticking out your tongue at Hitler. That's exactly what he's insisting to do. And so we have for the first moment the intermingling of themes, that moment of intersection, which therefore begins, and that's according to Waman Diyamar, the real Megillah begins Balayla Hu Nadadash Natanah. That's the Chiyuv of the Megillah, because it's here that everything clicks. And the click comes the instant after the themes intersect.